This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Renee Montaigne. In New York this week, two criminal trials of disgraced former chief executives get underway. In a moment, we will preview the case against Bernie Ebbers, the man who built WorldCom into a telecommunications giant and then watched it implode in an $11 billion accounting scandal. But first, the retrial of two former Tyco executives begins today. They are accused of stealing $600 million from the company. A mistrial was declared last year after a lone holdout juror was thought to have made a hand signal signaling okay to the defendants. The ensuing press coverage resulted in calls and letters to the juror forcing the judge to stop the trial. Nancy Solomon reports.
Prosecutors have promised to streamline their case. They predict the trial will only take 4 months instead of six. But there's likely to be no shortage of juicy tidbits about the executives' lavish lifestyles. The first trial featured videotape of a $2 million toga party with an ice sculpture of Michelangelo's David that indelicately spouted champagne. But prosecutors still face the same hurdle. They must prove Tyco executives Dennis Kozlowski and Mark Swartz knew they were not entitled to all the bonuses and perks. David Gurevich, a white-collar criminal attorney, doubts they can prove the defendants had criminal intent.
I think that this would have been a terrific civil case, but it's not a particularly good criminal one. This is really a case in which there is very, very little evidence of intent to show that the people believed that what they were doing was wrong. What this is a case of where the board of directors was really asleep at the switch.
This is the heart of the case. Were Kozlowski and Swartz given a blank check by the Tyco board of directors, or did they manipulate and deceive the board from knowing how much they used company funds as their own? Robert Kennedy, director of a business research institute at the University of Michigan, studied and taught students about Tyco at the peak of Kozlowski's success in the late 1990s.
They took this, you know, fairly small, somewhat profitable company and grew it by, you know, a factor of more than 10. And over that period, they were one of the top performing stocks on the New York Stock Exchange. He really was building a very strong business and achieving great success.
Kennedy met with Kozlowski and Swartz several times. They're both self-made men who began their careers as accountants. He says Swartz is a sharp guy who had an uncanny command of Tyco's complex financial wheeling and dealing.
You could ask him almost any question, and within a second or two, he had a pretty complex, detailed outline that he just worked right through. He was quite gracious and gave us all the information we needed. But you didn't have the sense that at the end of it you were going to go out for a beer with the guy or anything like that.
The two defendants look strikingly different. Swartz is 44, tall, thin, and has a full head of curly dark hair. Kozlowski is 58, red-faced and bald. Even though he often looked stern during the first trial, Kennedy says Kozlowski is the more personable one of the pair.
Kozlowski's kind of a big, burly guy, and he's friendly. He comes in, he shakes your hand, looks you right in the eye, and says, you know, what can I do for you? Let's talk about this.
Kozlowski built a corporate culture in which management salaries were relatively low, but incentive bonuses and stock options were high. Jesse Fried, a business professor at the University of California in Berkeley, studied Tyco for his book Pay Without Performance. Like many CEOs, Fried says Kozlowski inflated earnings to boost his stock value, collected bonuses based on those earnings, and kept board members happy by passing on perks to them as well.
Most of what Kozlowski and Swartz did was not that much different from practices that were quite widespread at the time and actually continue to be quite widespread.
What makes Tyco different, he says, is that they took bonuses and forgave loans without explicit permission from the board. That was the central focus of the prosecution in the first trial. This time around, the defense also is expected to stick with their strategy. They'll constantly remind jurors there's no law against greed or bad taste. For NPR News, I'm Nancy Solomon.